Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla. You may know him from putting his body on the line in Jackass, but now Johnny Knoxville is bringing you the wildest stories from the bravest folks he knows on his newest podcast, Pretty Sure I Can Fly. With his co-host, Elna Baker, they have incredible firsthand accounts from folks who surfed 100-foot waves, ride 600 miles per hour in a rocket sled, and wrestle crocodiles just for fun. They've been talking with brave souls who throw caution to the wind and push the boundaries of what humans are capable of. Or, as Johnny would say, they're talking to people who have more balls than a bowling alley. I'm Pretty Sure I Can Fly. Johnny and Elna bring you personal stories from unsung heroes that are part comedy, part adrenaline, and all heart. These are the inspirational, hold my beer stories that will make you want to grab the bull by the horns, literally and figuratively. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcast. You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly right now, early and free, right now on Wondery Plus. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Simply Safe. If you have 30 minutes, you never have to worry about home break-ins ever again because that's how fast you can set up your Simply Safe system. Two eyes in there, simplysafe.com/Adam. Go there, get all the sensors you need, custom system, set it up yourself. Do it in a half hour, simplysafe.com/Adam. All right, first half, we get into Alaska. It was Dawson, it was Max Zapata, it was Sunny. We all went, or half of us went to Alaska, and there's shooting, and there's seaplanes, and there's hijinks, and we'll get into a real breakdown of Alaska if you're ever thinking about going there. First, I'll tell you about Geico. Do you own, do you rent your home? Well, you do one or the other, and I bet you work hard, too. You want to make it easy to bundle those policies? Geico makes it easy. That's right. Take your automotive and you bundle it up with your homeowner's or your renter's insurance policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save and how easy it is to bundle when you get your bundle working at geico.com.
Hey, this is Rob Weiss.
And I'm Jeremy Green.
And this is Sean Chase.
Crazy times make crazy people, and we are proof of that.
Join us weekly as we talk all things headlines, pop culture, and how to navigate this crazy life alongside some of today's most interesting and influential guests.
Subscribe to our podcast, The Cray, on Podcast One, Spotify, and Apple, and wherever else you get your pods.
Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California. This is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, cardiologist, heart surgeon, and the author of The Energy Paradox, Dr. Stephen Gundry. With Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects, and now, in Alaska, he got up close and personal with a bear. He also saw some grizzlies. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice, but getting a mandate. You get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
And Bald Brian.
Great.
All right. So back from Alaska. Plenty of stories to tell about Alaska.
I have to say, I think I passed the point in my life where I get jealous of a lot of things. I was sort of seething for 5 days. I was so jealous.
It is breathtaking.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not, you know, half of it is the topography of it, the beauty of it, the natural surroundings and all that stuff. I think maybe Texas could fit in there three times, so I hear.
What?
Three times, fool.
Maybe two and a half or three. I don't know.
Man,
Mike said two. The audience said three.
Little maps where they show like a tiny little Alaska and a tiny little Hawaii off to the side really don't do it justice.
No, it's vast. It's spectacular. It's the takeaway that you get from Alaska is more the mindset of Alaska.
Yeah,
Texas one and a half times. I don't think it's three times, but at least according.
It's much bigger than we're led to believe.
Well, it's twice. Texas has, you know, 270 square miles, 70,000 square miles, and Alaska's got 663.
Yeah, so by the math, it would work out more than twice.
More than twice.
The way Alaska's kind of configured with
the way it looks, it doesn't look right. But yes, more than twice. We'll just go 2.5. Anyway, there's things. It's the mindset. Hmm. Everybody who passes everyone on the road waves to everyone on the road. Mm-hmm. So if you're driving and their car's coming the other direction on the highway, it's the wave.
Hey, how you doing?
Everyone gives the wave. The next thing is general freedoms. Like, you know, at some point when they were like, well, we're going to go out and drive the ATVs. And I'm from California, so what are the rules? Now, if you're from the inner city of Chicago, there are no rules in terms of ATVs. But if you're a taxpayer, there's going to be some rules. Right. So, like, what are the rules? And I'm like, well, ride wherever you want. And I go, well, yeah, but what about the main highway? And it's like, don't ride in the middle of it. Just kind of stay to the side a little bit, and then the cops will leave you alone.
So everyone.
So everyone just sort of leaves everyone alone because that's why people came there. Not a lot of Karens in Alaska.
What's the homeless and graffiti situation like?
It's zero as far as I could tell. Wow. where we were, but we traveled about a little bit. So couple thoughts. First, a backtracking and some cleaning up from a few days ago, because Gio sent me an email when I was railing against Dr. Drew, not giving any money to the charity.
Mm-hmm.
And was it
clarification?
Was it Katrina? It was the tsunami relief.
Oh, yes. Oh, it was the Thailand. Sri Lankan. Yeah.
Yes. And then an interesting insight into my mind. I have a recollection of cutting a sizable check, but I certainly didn't want to be the guy saying I gave $10,000 and find out I gave $2,000 when somebody corrects me because they've heard.
Right.
The episode. So I was saying 10,000, maybe 5,000.
10 plus 5.
Again, because I did not want to over exaggerate.
Yeah, that's no good.
And no one, I don't like hyperbole, and I don't like getting caught and saying, here's how generous I was through the fog of time, and then find out I gave $1,500. I gave $15,000.
Whoa!
Now, that's fine. That's back in 2005 bucks. But the main point is how my stupid brain rounded it the other direction.
Yeah, probably adjusted for inflation.
I took off a full 10 grand from what I actually gave. But I gave 15. And that was to Mike Shinoda and Brad Delson. Yeah, okay. Hubistank and Lincoln Park were the two guys that were in there for that.
And what did Dr. Drew give?
He gave nothing, but he gave something to his charity.
Okay.
Which, now that amount has to be way under $500, but that's how it worked. He gave to his charity.
He knows where it's going.
He knows where it's going.
That's right.
All right. So just a little clarity on that. Now, so we traveled to Alaska. We landed. I don't know where we landed. We didn't land in Bristol Bay, did we?
I mean, Anchorage,
the
right?
Airport.
In King Salmon?
Yeah, well, we landed in Anchorage, and then we went to King Salmon, I guess, from there.
It's called King Salmon, Alaska.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's very military-based. So, because everywhere else was what's called, like, the Neck and the Katmai and all.
Okay.
Like, the natives named it, but then King
Salmon.
Like,
we're from sunny Palm Tree, California.
King Salmon's where the base was and everything.
Right. So, we landed. We took a five-minute ride to the lodge. It was, as you would expect a lodge to look. It was nice, not overdone. Just
some nice taxidermy.
All you needed. They had some moose antlers and things like that spread about. One of the highlights of the trip is they had a guy who was a frequent guest who was a singer-songwriter. It was more of a covered tunes, played the acoustic guitar. Every night after dinner, he would set up and delight the crowd. But Dawson and Maxipata got up there.
They sat in?
Ooh,
as well.
Featured.
Both played a set and blew away the crowd. I mean, really.
Wow.
They were all into it. It was, there's a picture of Dawson.
Dawson playing.
Dawson, you are all man.
Apparently, after the first night we played, word got around the town. There were musicians in town.
Wow. Yes.
So people, a whole bunch of people showed up to the lodge the next night to see us play.
Wow.
Now you're committed.
You attracted a following.
Yeah, there's like, I mean, the population there's 300.
Yeah.
Wow.
But it was nice. It was nice to have the guys playing.
Did Chris do all the covers? Did he do the list of things you've told him to do all these years?
This is a finger
no,
problem song,
he
real.
Did not, but he wowed the crowd. The crowd was absolutely wowed.
That's like, awesome.
People were coming up to he and Dawson after the show, coming in to see them specifically.
Wow.
It was a wonderful,
yeah,
wonderful way to
celebrity up there.
Spend an evening.
Cool.
We would meet in the lodge at 8 a.m. to get our fishing together for the next day.
Sure.
Yeah, typically when you go fishing, you wake up at the butt crack of dawn because you want to get as much daylight as you can. But with Alaska, it's all daylight.
You
can sleep in and then just go fishing whatever you want.
When did it get dark and how dark would it get? And you missed it because you were asleep during that time.
I caught
Dawson.
Didn't
Dawson
miss will
it.
Know. Yeah.
Dawson. Everyone else went to bed, so you tell us.
It never gets completely dark.
So it's always
it did
a
not
dusky.
Get, there's very, very dusky. I got some pictures I'll send to Chris we can put up of what nighttime looked like.
Was that so confusing for your brain?
It was like...
Megria helped.
Yeah, it was like 1:30. It would finally kind of get dark-ish. And then maybe 4:30 or 5, it was just light again. So there was no real nighttime.
The first night or two where you were just like, my body tells me it's time to party.
It's kind of weird walking into the weirdest part is when we landed in Anchorage and we took an Uber and we went to the hotel and we got there at like 12:30 and it's light outside.
Yeah. 12:30 midnight.
We've been traveling all day, but it's still light. And then at some point, you go into the bar and the lobby, and the guy's telling you it's last call, and it's light outside.
That was mimosa time.
There's roosters crowing.
Right. Had a funny, we'll get back to Alaska, but had a funny experience with Mike and the Uber driver when we were going to, and it kind of explains a the chapter that we're at now in our society, which is we are going from Anchorage, from the hotel in Anchorage on Wednesday to the airport. And we're going to take that flight into King Salmon. And we're not cutting it close, but we're doing what we always do. Mm-hmm. We didn't allow a whole lot of wiggle room in there. And it's me, Sonny, and Mike standing outside, and the Uber guy is going to pull up in 1 minute. And the Uber guy pulls up. Bad sign. He's wearing a mask alone in the car.
Oh, boy.
And then Sonny, who's a big boy now, and I get into the back of this smallish Honda, and Mike gets into the front because we've been doing that for a while now. The three of us, Mike normally jumps into the front and we jump in the back.
Helps navigate.
The guy tells him no passengers in the front.
Oh, wow.
Mike explains that we've been in many Ubers where he's welcome in the front seat. The guy says, nope. Meanwhile, we have a week's worth of luggage already in
wow.
the trunk. And, Mike goes,
I guess the scam is over.
We're not going to pack ourselves in the back seat. And the guy is belligerent. He's a fucking dick. And he's like, but interesting. I've told you guys about the minimum wage gilded cage.
Mm-hmm.
This guy who's on the lowest rung of society, he's
power.
Driving Uber in Anchorage. Yeah. That's a pox a gypsy puts on you. May your son drive an Uber in Anchorage. It's a gypsy pox. It's a spell. He's the lowest on the fucking rung, but he's like telling all of us to buzz off. Like,
second lowest. The guy with the Ralph on the key to the Ralph's car on the keychain in Anchorage. Apparently, according to Gina, lower.
Yeah. Oh, that's humiliating.
So he tells us to all go fucking pound sand and to fuck off, which is a perfect metaphor for my minimum wage gilded cage. You have guys
that
are.
He has all the power.
He has all the power. He has none of the. He has nothing but power.
Wow.
He has nothing but dominion. You know what I mean? He doesn't have an account.
That's
he doesn't have a car. He doesn't have anything, but he does have this one thing.
Yeah. Wow.
And I was saying to Mike after he booted us out.
You literally got booted out.
He told you to pound sand, wherever that is.
Mike told him to fuck off when he told us not. There was no riding in the front seat.
Wow.
Mike begged me after we got all our luggage out of the trunk to leave the trunk open. Because I have morals and scruples, closed the trunk. Yeah. And also because I didn't want to deal with the guy getting out of the car.
Circling back.
Yeah. Plus, it's Anchorage. He could be packing. You know what I mean?
Easily.
He was a youngish, middle-aged-ish, youngish foreign guy. He just had sort of a wacky name. I don't know where he was from. And he took off. He drove 50 feet and he stopped and he sat there for a while. And I later learned that so he could write a super shitty review.
Oh, good.
About Chris? Mike or Chris.
No, this wasn't my Uber.
Oh,
I was already on another one.
Right. But he drove down the parking lot about 30 feet and then just stopped and sat in his car for a while. So he was definitely wanting to get to the review while he was fresh. Mike said, I'll call another Uber. I was like, aren't we a little pressed for time? And this is Anchorage, and are these Ubers over the place? And he goes, no, we're going to get a guy. He's going to ride in that front seat. He's going to...
Hopeful.
Sure enough, the guy's name is like Dave. He's like 70 years old. He pulls up in a Ford, an American car. He pulls up. Mike just leans in the window and goes, can I ride in the front? He goes, yeah, hop in.
I can rest.
Jump on my lap.
Jump in. He's not wearing a mask alone in his car, which was just a good sign. He tells Mike to hop in. There's no discussion about front seats. Mm-hmm. He's a retired bush pilot who's been out there since 1980.
That's your guy.
He turned out, I thought it was all going to go wrong. I thought we'd never get another Uber. We'd miss our flight. We'd get this guy's cousin who was equally as angry. We got the nicest retired dude on the planet pulled up. We all piled in and off we went to the airport.
Did you tell him you were in a hurry? Did you haul ass? Because that completes the, you know, the oorv of Dave.
He literally pulled up 90 seconds after this guy, the first guy was dispatched, which is, it just falls under the heading of it either all goes right or it all goes wrong. It was either, I just said, Mike, you've never been more right in your fucking life. We got the super courteous old timer who came up and said, hop in front. We all took off to the airport in a slightly nicer car 90 seconds later, or it was all going to go south and we're going to miss our flight. But I did say, when you give dumb people power, and that's what we're dealing with. That's what I just dealt with the TSA in Denver. I said on the podcast, we all just, Sonny and I walked into clear, sailed right through. Mm-hmm. Person never even looked up. TSA guy's like, go on, enjoy your flight. Right. In Denver, we had the Dumbo who liked his power. Sure. And it's dangerous to give a bunch of dumb fucks a ton of power because they fuck your shit up. And they're not used to it. When you give guys, if you ever see the way a guy like Mark Geragos conducts himself around people he has power over, he's not a douche or a bully. He knows how to, because he earned his way up to that rank. The guy who's the Uber driver just got shoved to the front of the power line, even though he has no real juice. Right. He is in charge of us.
He's in charge of his car.
That one moment.
It's the lottery principle.
Yes. It's like,
you give someone much money who hasn't figured out the tools to earn that money.
I'm going
to,
but my first buy is my initials on the side of the car in rainbow tape. Right. And then I'm going to buy, you know, my aunt a snowmobile. Mm-hmm. Like, these are the ways. Yes. You do not know how to handle money. You do not know to handle power.
Yeah. If you're in Alaska, though, that's a good buy.
Yeah, it's true.
A snowmobile for the aunt.
So we made it to the airport. We got to the lodge. Drinks were flowing. Everything was great.
It looked pretty sweet from the pictures that you posted.
It was definitely sweet. We took a...
It was nice triangulating your weekend between you, Chris, and Jen. I was able to get a really good picture of what was going on up there.
I told Jen, post as much as possible.
Chris got into the river, the knick-knack, the knack-knack.
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 Paddywhack.
River with me.
Oh, yeah.
I saw
the last day of the trip. Yeah, I think
Adam got in one morning. He just went in alone.
Oh, you're neck deep.
Wasn't Nick Nack a Cosby kid?
Was he?
Oh, Brian.
I'm serious. I thought he was.
I don't remember the names of all the Cosby kids except for Fat Albert, Mushmouth. Yeah, we were down. We walked down to the dock.
I just got
into this river.
Brutal.
The river was, it was coolish outside and a little windy, but the river was 52.
Yeah.
Which is brisk.
Shrinkage.
Not as cold as my cold tub. So I said, well, it's not as cold, but there's like a current and stuff. But yeah. Went out in the river, swam around, and then the next day, Max Pattison, I'm coming.
I had to.
Yes.
Did you?
Yeah. You're in Alaska. It's just
when in Alaska.
I have to be one with Alaska for a little bit.
Were you naked?
I wasn't. I mean, it wouldn't have mattered if I was or not. We went on a much windier day, so like the current was really pulling. Adam went in first, and I wanted to jump in, but he just kind of walked in. And I thought, all right, I'll
held
just
hands.
He knows what he's doing. Yeah, you can put that. But, oh, by the way, here's a picture of it of the dock out there that we went out onto, and this is midnight.
Holy crap!
Okay, so this for anyone else, this looks like 4 o'clock in the winter.
Yeah, you know,
like
about to set.
Yeah, a little dusky.
Yeah. Wow.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know what? I would imagine, just psychologically, that this reduces a lot of crime.
Oh, the light.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Can't get away with all shit in the dark.
I would imagine. And then everyone owning a gun and being white also helps reduce the crime just a little bit.
Right.
Because everybody's packing.
People already being on the lam.
That's true. Yeah. They're all under the radar.
So,
yeah, Adam went in the first time, I was watching him do it just to kind of gauge like how cold it'd be. He just went in, he's like, it's not that bad, and then just walked right in. So that kind of helped me get in the next day.
You're not the kind of guy who would know this off the top of your head, but how many states have you now not visited? Because Alaska is, you know, the final frontier. That's a hard one for some people.
Yeah, I haven't kept track, but I suppose Mike and I could just go over my stand-up calendar and we could find out.
I feel like maybe Delaware.
Probably parts of the plains and probably some of the south.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, Alaska is, now when people say, they say this about Australia, you know, they go, oh, you got to go once. You got to go one time.
Sure.
They don't seem to say that about a lot of places, but they'll say it about Australia. You got to go.
You got to see for
yourself. You just got to go once.
Yes.
I will say that about Alaska. You should go. You've got to go once. It takes a little bit to get there. It's like 6 hour flight, 5.5 hour flight. We unfortunately had a layover in Seattle for some time. It took us a little while to get there and back, but catch the direct flight. Go. You can land in Anchorage in about 5.5 hours, and then it's like a 40-minute flight on a real full-size jet, by the way, not like a puddle jumper or regional, to King Salmon, or go wherever you want in Alaska. But the point is like, just go there once. It's not, the air's great, and the region's great, and the view is great, and everything, you know, there's bald eagles, you know, soaring in the sky, and salmon, awesome, you know, going upstream, and all that, bears out in
the
woods,
plucking.
And everything. But it's really just the people. The people there are great. There's no complaining. There's no discussing. There's no, you know, well, I wanted to, or I was thinking of, like, the guides are these great. The guides are the greatest. I mean, just pulling the boat in a windstorm, backing up the truck, getting on the trailer, pulling
guys
in. Like, they just do it all. It took 5 minutes. Like, it's just a hearty group. And if there's a, if you have a thought, like if your thought, and I always say this, like, if you go, oh, L.A., oh, those Beverly Hills people, oh, they're such phonies. Yeah. Oh, I hate dealing with those phonies or those Hollywood types or whatever. If you don't like that, then this is the place with the exact opposite of that. The human beings are 100% different than that. Everybody we saw, everyone Beautiful. We met, everyone you know, everyone just waves at each other. The guy took us hunting, or I should say shooting, the guy's wife, a pilot that flew the float plane. Like, they're all the same people.
So yeah. You did get in the float plane.
I got in the float plane, and we took the float plane to the falls. The thing about the float plane is, it's always two things. For some reason, they feel obligated to announce the year the plane was built. Like,
I could do without that.
Know.
That's a Guston, 1953.
I'm
it's
good.
Like, I haven't flown in a plane earlier than 1985 in a long time, but that's from the 50s. That's before
like
they had jet commercial.
Right.
You know, so they always announce the age is, I'm the oldest guy there, and that thing was made a good decade before I was born.
It was made to fight in Korea.
Right. Or maybe be a surveillance plane in Korea.
At least it had a couple of rafts on the bottom.
So you get into the plane that's as old as your parents.
You all piled in there?
We all piled in. And then, you know, I don't want to be this guy, but I have seen many movies where they had float planes involve them. They've never landed successfully. At some point, we're going to be on an island. Yeah. Chris is going to have a compound fracture. He's not going to make it through the night.
We're deciding who to eat.
And I'm going to be warding off a grizzly bear with a torch. That's how they always start with, hey, we're going fishing. This
you're
going to
have
a awesome.
Tibia on your hand while
right.
warding off.
Right. There's one of us is not going to make it through the night. That's how it's going to work. So it was weird that I had every single movie that ever had a float plane in it, they never landed. Not successfully, right. But you, now the thing that's crazy about the float planes is there is no airport or landing strip.
Right.
There's just these giant bodies of water. So you just kind of taxi out. There's other float planes like coming in while you're going out or going past, but no one's really like waving at each other or talking to each other. It's just kind of understood. Here's where we're going.
Was it a rough descent?
The descent was a little choppy, but it's they pop up so fast because the wings aren't swept. They're an above the fuselage kind of wing. Like they have a ton of lift. They don't fly very fast. So if you want a plane to fly fast, you need the wings to sweep and be back at an angle and not create a ton of lift. But if you want to go just straight across the top, he throttled it up on the lake. We got going 50 miles an hour, you know, maybe several hundred feet, and then just popped up. You pop up.
Anybody then, freaked out or at least admit it?
No. Okay. Then you just fly over tundra and mountains and lakes and just nothingness, just the most beautiful scenery you've ever seen in your life. And then you come up to the lake that's next to the island where the bears are, and he just brings it down and just kind of feathers it at right. It just does a flare right at the end, just lifts it up and just sets you right down.
Wow.
Perfect. This guy's done it a million times.
Smoother than any other plane like that I've landed that I've been in.
Yes. You think it was going to be a little hairy. It's not. They never, I was sitting up front, so I was like checking the guy's gauges the whole time.
sure, like
backseat
that.
Flyer.
Yeah.
The guy did yell at me because there was a mosquito in the plane. And it was on the windshield right in front of me, and I tried to whack it with my hat.
Oh, yeah. Put your fist through it.
And the guy goes, that's plexiglass. You shouldn't do that. And then he goes, do the pinch technique. And I was like, I don't know the pinch technique. And he just reached over and just pinched it between his forefinger and his ring finger.
Real
just
man.
Pinched it and just threw it on the ground.
Probably good guess. With the
later on, mid-flight, a giant scary spider popped out onto the windshield, too, from a little hiding place on, like, the A-pillar. I didn't say anything because I didn't want to panic the group. But you fly at about 1,000 feet once you're up. 1,100 feet, I was looking at the altimeter. I'm assuming it was 1.1 or something like that. So it's like, it seemed like about 1,000 feet. Fly about 90 miles an hour, maybe 100 miles an hour, and then you just sort of come in. It was about a half hour flight. You land down there. Once you get on,
I don't see a pilot in that plane.
Once you get on the island, then you start walking for a little while.
How do you get off the plane?
They just push it right up to the shore. They just and you walk across the pontoon, and you just take a little jump onto the shore, try not to get your feet wet. Then you go to a sort of a base camp where they give you a little spiel about bears and what do's and don'ts.
Are the don'ts?
They tell you
do haze them if they come at you. Don't run. If you run, you're prey.
Fast
they'll go after you. Walk the other direction. You know, if you see them. And there was bear scat all over the place. So on the trails, on all the main trails and stuff. So the bears go down to the falls. Falls are about 5-6 feet high. They just stand in the river.
I thought they shit in the woods.
Yeah. Well, they shit by the trail in the woods.
Yeah, weirdly, they aim for the trail. Like, it's all in the trail.
Just let you know who's boss.
Sorry,
and
being hazed.
Did you see the moment? Did you see a bear pick up a salmon out of the water?
No, we saw no salmon, just bears waiting for salmon standing on top of the waterfall the whole time.
Everyone kept saying the salmon are a week late.
Right.
So, the bears are going to starve.
But the bear would just, the big alpha would stand at the top of the fall. Mm. The mama and the two cubs had to keep a safe distance and were always an eye and a nose out for the bear.
You saw cubs.
Oh, yeah. There was a big kind of alpha male. He was just the biggest, and he just stood on top of the falls. Yeah. He just stood there. There'd be like a medium-sized male that'd be downstream, just a couple of feet, just on the bottom of the fall. And he might just sit in the water there.
Yeah.
One just sat on a rock for a while, like a dog sitting down by a door wanting to go out. Mm-hmm. Then there was the mama bear and her two cubs. And the cubs just followed the mama bear everywhere.
Did they frolic?
They ran from the big bear whenever the big they got to walk. Their head is on a swivel, constantly looking for the big guy.
Oh wow!
If they run into the big guy's going to eat a cub. I imagine. So
that's what I heard happen.
You're right. So mama would just be down the stream, but always with an eye up toward the alpha male who was at the top of the thing. And as long as they kept this kind of 200-foot buffer, they were okay. Wow. Then at some point, mama would go to shore, and the cubs would follow her, and they'd be hanging out. But then Big Bear would come wandering around, and they'd hustle.
Time to get out.
Out of there.
So, like, gorilla and bears are fucking assholes. Like, they're the ones that are, like, kill the cubs and kill the babies.
Yeah. I'm not an expert, but from the body language of the mama and the cubs... The cubs knew they had to stay next to mama, and the mama knew she had to stay away from the male alpha bear.
Like, they would be fishing. And I guess, Adam, before we got there, some of the people said that they actually caught, the mama and the cubs caught a few fish. And then, they were, like 200 yards or 100 yards from the falls. And if the big bear would even just look in their direction, the mama bear would freeze.
Oh, my
God.
And
just be totally alerted. And then if it took a step forward, they would just scamper away.
Did you get in trouble when it was revealed that you had a cub in your coat on the way back?
They weren't that cubby. They were clearly juveniles, but they were not, you know, little
playful
teddy
little
bear.
Roly-polies. Yeah.
No, they weren't roly-polies. They were able to go out in the stream and sort of hang out. Saw some anglers down the stream a couple hundred yards just walking across the stream, like three dudes with their fishing poles. I don't know who those dudes are.
I don't either. And then that's why I thought it was crazy that the next day we hear like, oh, bear swipe at Brooks Falls. Like somebody got swiped by a bear.
Yeah.
Bear
so swiping. You go up on a kind of a landing on these pilasters. You're only about 5 or 6 feet above the action, but you're in a sort of raised position and it's a sort of observation, go to the edge, stand on this thing, look down at the bears, you know, take pictures and all that kind of stuff. There was a funny exchange and an interesting piece of kismet that went on. I'll tell you what, we got more to talk about. Let me get to Tommy John. That's right, Tommy John.
Hope you had your Tommy Johns.
Oh yes, I did. I went, that's what I wore into the river.
Smart.
Every day because I did not want to go naked because the boy and the prying eyes of the people in the lodge were there. Mm-hmm. Also because of getting out of the water at 52 degrees is not what you want when you're nude. I did not want to go in my trunks, my basketball shorts, because they take 2 days to dry in that weather. So I went my Tommy Johns because I could just hang them out over the shower and the next day they'd be dry so I could hop back in the lake with them again. So they dry fast. They keep you 2 to 3 times cooler than regular cotton. dozens of comfort and innovations like breathable, lightweight, moisture wicking fabric. Tommy John doesn't have customers. They have fanatics. And I told you I will not travel without these things. It's the best pair you'll ever wear. It's free. Guarantee. Right, Dawson?
Right now, get 20% off your first order at TommyJohn.com/Adam. Go to TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Adam. See site for details.
Oh, you got a picture of me jumping off the float plane.
Yeah, Adam, we all just took it one foot in the water and just figured, okay, one of our feet are going to be wet, but wow. Adam decided to jump.
That's some Dance with the Stars shit.
Made it dry, man. I made a 4 or 5 foot leap. I ran down the pontoon and just leapt for the shore because I didn't want to dunk the foot in the cold lake because then you're just going along the whole. Rest of the
soggy foot.
Adam was an animal this whole trip. He got out after the cold plunge, just gets up onto the docks, looks into the sky, and just goes, Wolverine!
I forgot I did that.
I did see pictures of all of you holding fish. Did you each catch those fish?
August did not.
Oh.
August caught no fish.
Why is he holding two?
Hey, give me those fish.
August caught no fish.
So this is your first time fishing, right?
I've been fishing with Jimmy a few times and really caught anything. We'll get to that because it's interesting. I didn't know we did a kind of a fishing that I was unaware of. I'll put it to you that way. Take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Alaska right after this. Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there, owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle your policies at Geico? Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing too because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey, Adam, this is Jeremiah in Virginia, and I was driving down 95 the other day, and I saw a road sign that said, "You're not a firework, don't drive lit." Get it on.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Yeah, I got something to say about that, but I'll tell you after the Alaska. Chris will remind me about the situation on the 101. We went out fishing the first day. We caught nothing. We went after king salmon, I think, or maybe we went after rainbow trout.
It was king salmon, yeah.
It didn't matter to me. We're sitting in a boat, bald eagles overhead. Mm. It was so goddamn majestic. I think the guides were a little frustrated because they're over the whole majesty of the thing. Right. They want to catch fish. I was just enjoying the outdoors and the boat ride and the lake and how clear it was.
They were kind of upset and almost like embarrassed that we weren't able to get anything the first day. And these guys go fishing 7 days a week. The guy that took Dawson and me out, we asked him like what he does. He fishes every day. And then what about winter? You stay? He's like, yeah, I stay here. And what do you do if you can't fish? Like, oh, I got the fishing channel. And like, so if he's not fishing, he's just watching the fishing channel.
He's got an aquarium in the lodge.
Got that life.
So the next day, we found out that the sockeye were running, which are not the king salmon. They're a smaller salmon.
I like a
sockeye. But the sockeye salmon were running. And if we went to this place up the river, we could get into a cove and we could catch them. Now, what I didn't know is the way you catch the sockeye. Sockeye salmon just run right along the bank all the way up. The fish are nuts. They go. They start in Bristol Bay. They start out in the bay and or at sea. You guys all know the story. And then they go all the way up all the streams and the tributaries. But you got to know how far these fucking fish travel because we went down to Bristol Bay. And that was a long ride where they come in. And then when we went up, I'm saying up and down, I don't know if it's down and over or up, but we went to Brooks Falls, and that's a plane ride. So the point is the salmon go start way the fuck down there and go all the way up, and they end up in the mouth of the Bear, at the top of the miniature waterfall up there.
Oh, what a letdown.
So the sockeye were running. Now, the sockeye are, you know, good size. They're, you know,
2 feet, 2.5 feet.
They're anywhere from 16 inches to 25 inches, and they're anywhere from, you know, 4 pounds to 10 pounds. So, but they're good sized fish you've seen in the picture, and it's good eating and all that stuff. And you go to this cove, and you can see them literally just all going up the stream. Mm-hmm. And they go about 10 feet from the shore in water that's like 3, maybe 4 feet deep. Oh. And you just see them running. You just see them going. So it's a steady stream.
And yeah, I said, they're going upstream. So like they're moving pretty fast, like trying to swim, but their speed, they're swimming upstream is pretty slow. So you're just watching.
Right,
them.
Right. Against right. the current.
And then I said, now, what are we using? Lures or mm-hmm. bait? And they're like, no, once they leave the bay, they don't eat. I don't know, probably something to do with spawning, but there is no eating for this entire, you couldn't imagine expending more energy and not eating.
Yeah,
it'd be the equivalent of you saying, I'm going to run 9 Tour de France's in a shopping cart, but there'll be no granola bars like the entire time. Like,
not interesting.
They don't eat, but they have to swim hundreds of miles up a stream against the current.
Right.
So what you do is you cast your line in there and you sort of drag it. It's kind of fly fishing. You kind of drag it and you hook them. It's just your hook, which is just floating free with no bait or no lure or anything, just hooks them.
They don't bite. You just grab them.
It's just
they
kind of fish in a
barrel.
They
don't bite. You grab them. And I was like, that seems kind of weird, insane.
Not very sportsmanlike.
But it started working, and then it started working pretty fast, and everyone was pulling them up, but not Mike. Mike stood on the boat, and you can see the stream of them going right by, and the guy to his right and the guy to his left. Everyone was catching fish, and Mike wasn't.
Hey, Mike, he's talking about you, you fuck ass.
Yeah, so Gene, we had to put on waders where it's like they're these overalls that kind of cut off at the chest.
Like rubber.
Yeah, so you can get into the water. Everybody was in the water going, but Mike decided to stay on the boat.
Oh, well, there you go.
Well, but no, people were on the shore. Dawson was on the shore. There was some. Jen was on the shore.
Yeah, but the fish knew he wasn't into it. He wasn't
giving
his
all. We conducted a little experiment. So after about 3 hours of Mike catching nothing, and Dawson pulled up 5 at that point.
7. At that point, yeah, 5.
5. He was just pulling them up one after the other, and so was everybody. Sonny and Jen and Chris. Everyone was pulling them up. Mike, literally nothing, with everyone around him, had pulled up at that point. You know, we pulled up 23 fish between us, and Mike accounted for 0. So at some point, he said, I'm getting off this boat, and I'm going to go stand where Dawson stood, because Dawson was pulling them up all day. And then he went and stood where Dawson stood. And Dawson, did you go onto the boat, or was that Jen?
No, I just moved down a little bit. Chris went up on the boat.
And then whoever replaced Mike on his position on the boat started pulling him up, but Mike still never...
Wow.
Never
cursed.
Got one. And at some point at the end of the day, when we got near our limit, the guide hooked one and then handed the pole.
Oh. Like you went for a little girl who's like crying on the shore.
It's like I think you take your daughter to the seafood or the sushi restaurant, and they put the little rubber band around the chopsticks.
It was exactly that.
How embarrassing.
It was like from the Make a Fish Foundation. Here, little boy. Here, little
well
terminal
done.
Boy.
Good.
Make a fish.
Yep.
And he just handed him the pole, and Mike so technically caught, you know, half a fish. But so we did all that, and then, you know, came back, and everyone was in a good mood, and the guys went to the fish house and just filleted all the fish.
Those fish. I like that.
I got some in my – I got a lot in my freezer because we got the cooler from the airport and all that stuff. Comedy served one up that night for us to enjoy
amazing.
Dinner. Yeah, they put them all in the
vacuum seal.
Wow. Beautiful, like a hue of orange and pink that you're not used to seeing in the supermarket. So fresh, so whatever, and served it up for us for dinner along with the moose you see beneath us.
What?
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah, moose.
Oh, wow.
That's moose?
There's
moose.
Yeah, yeah, moose steak.
How is that?
Of the lodge.
Well, we'll get into that.
Oh, my God. Please don't skip that.
The comedy is, after being surrounded with salmon for 3 days, went to Garrigus' wedding on the 4th of July. Salmon.
Oh,
and by the way, not salmon or Salisbury steak. The dinner, the plate was brought to the table, was a big chunk of salmon. That is it. It was good. I didn't want a lot to do with it. I was looking for some like ribs or something, but salmon is what they serve.
It's like in Castro when Tom Hanks came back and they threw the big party for him.
With the crab.
The whole feast was seafood. Yeah, right. Crab legs and whatnot.
Moose is... It's got
moose
a little...
Moose
It's a little gamey. It's got a little... beef with a little liver finish to it.
Really reminded me of liver. Like if there's anything to compare it to, is they're kind of livery and gamey, but still a little closer to beef as well. So it's like a mixture of the two.
What was the texture?
Livery.
It was kind of soft.
Livery, beefy.
Yeah.
It was kind of both.
A little
greasy, a little dark.
You're not going to come back and go, God, I could really go
a little
some
gamey. No, none of us felt that way, but Chris.
Oh yeah,
Chris loved it.
I had to. I had to keep eating it. One I've never had before. Two, I did like it, but the best part was, so we did the live show, which was yesterday's episode, and Adam goes on stage talking about the salmon and the moose, and he's like, "Yeah, the salmon. I had a day of. I thought it would be great, but just tastes like salmon." And I've never seen a crowd turn on Adam so fast.
Yeah,
and then Adam doubles down and says, "Also, the moose was gross." And Adam was gonna get stuff thrown at him. They really were upset.
It was a partisan crowd and a tough part of Anchorage and a honky tonk.
Yeah,
and those guys did not like my moose salmon.
And then after the show, they're coming up to me like, "So, how'd they cook the moose? They got to tell me everything." Like maybe they did it wrong. Like they were really concerned that Adam didn't care for the moose.
You are not trying to ingratiate yourself into this group.
Hey, I'm a truth teller.
Yeah,
and I was getting paid and I wanted to leave.
Yeah,
but I'm a truth teller. I didn't know that. 97% of Anchorage audience members would love moose.
What's up, Naples? What's up with your pizza?
Yeah.
They're so into moose and salmon. Like, I thought, talking to people in Anchorage, if we said salmon, they'd roll their eyes like, oh, yeah, not salmon.
That's
again.
The local fair.
Oh, they love it. They're so into it. They're so proud of it.
And I thought they'd be either a little burnt out on it or they treat it like when people go, oh, we should go down to the La Brea Tar Pits while I'm in town. Like, there's nothing there. You don't even need to go there. Like,
lobster sucks.
Like making fun of our street dogs, which we would agree with.
Yes, yes. I thought, I didn't know the entire room was that into moose.
They love their salmon and their moose and all that.
So, yes, I haze the crowd, but the guy who shot the moose was sitting directly behind us.
Yeah.
So we couldn't leave any moose on the plate, even though we weren't really that into the moose, but that's where Chris kicks in.
What about August?
Come saw with the moose, right? It was okay, but they didn't love it.
Yeah, and these were appetizers. We still had like full ribeyes come in. We had like
moose tartare.
We had fish and chips. Like, I mean, the lodge had really great meals.
Yeah, they made goulash. They made a huge pot of goulash for me was great.
With moose meat?
Who knows?
God, it was ribeye, I think.
Oh. Yeah, there was ribeye.
They made a goulash. We ate it that day. We ate it that night. We ate it the next morning. Like, it was just awesome.
Gilding the lily, that ribeye and a goulash.
Right.
I know.
Did you all stay in a cabin, or did you have separate, you know, it was like a hotel?
It was a little rooms down a hall kind of thing.
It was a lodge.
It was a lodge. It had rooms.
20 rooms.
Yeah, maybe not even. Well, maybe there's an upstairs and stuff. But either way, it was pretty civilized, you know, hot and cold running water and all that. Bathrooms and everything.
Did you run into any locals that seemed like they had a pass they were running from?
There were some pretty salty characters out at the lodge, but they all seemed pretty more interesting than dangerous.
Yeah. Jean Valjean-esque.
Sure. Yeah. Adam gets that.
And they wanted Les Mis.
Yeah. There you go.
And they wanted... the doctor who injected Tim McVeigh with the lethal injection was at the next day.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Real celebrity sighting.
Wait a second. You forgot?
Sonny recognized him immediately.
fan of your work.
Wait a second. How did that even come to be known? How does that get worked into conversation?
He leads with it.
Yeah, well, a couple of guys came up to Adam, and they were just fans, and they were shaking Adam's hand. And as soon as he walked away, the manager at the lodge told us, like, oh, do you know who that is? And told us, like, yeah, he's the doctor that does all the lethal injections for all the high-end, high-profile mm-hmm. Death sentences and things.
That's celebrity.
Holy shit.
I forgot about that guy, yeah. And
he didn't go bend his ear?
God, I was... It was like, I got to go bend that guy's ear. And then some point I drank some martinis and Dawson started playing and I forgot all about it. Yeah. But there were some salty dudes there, but in a good way, like salty, salt of the earth kind of way. Salty of the earth kind of way.
I love it.
Wow. Speaking of Dawson was going to be my opener at Coots.
Yeah.
I said to Dawson, that's 20 minutes, man. You're used to doing 6.5. Dawson said, I got it.
Oh.
I said, all right, well, if you want to go 15, go 15. Dawson said, I got it. I was sitting up on the upstairs in the green room. Dawson took the stage for the late show on Saturday night. And after about 9 minutes, I thought, I better go down there just to...
check on
see
things.
See how we're doing.
Good thing you did, because I ran out of material at 11.
Do some crowd work?
He was getting laughs.
There you go. That's all that matters.
I did do some crowd work. Somebody in the crowd yelled Alan Parsons, and so that added about 2 minutes to my set, because I said that I went to a party at his house, and they had a queue of guests coming in who were announced by this old British guy, now entering, you know, and they'd say everybody's name. They made it as British as possible. And I said, so they had everybody waiting in a queue. And then I said to the crowd, the queue, that's what they call a line in Europe. In fact, I remember being in London snorting cues off the back of a toilet. But that's another story.
Good,
and it got some pretty good laughs.
Yeah, it was good while it lasted. I'm just glad I went down there.
Thank you.
And
Sandman?
I looked to my left, and I saw you there, and you were like, all right, you can throw in the towel now.
Yeah.
Like, thank you.
But after I heard you say I'm out of material into a microphone, I thought maybe it's time to get up. But that was fine.
That's great.
And the thing that was interesting... which is an interesting observational thing that Sonny possesses. Sonny was a champion the whole time.
About to ask if he was frightened at any point.
No, he went out on the ATVs. He went super slow on the ATVs. No complaining. No, anything. You'd say to Sonny, like, you know, at some point you just go, all right, let's go to bed. And you go, okay. He just gets up and starts walking toward the room. And then at some point you get up in the morning and go, get dressed. We're going fishing. He goes, okay. It's never a negotiation. Yeah. It was always like, well, what time? Why do we have to? Or, you know, nothing. It was just.
He's an agreeable boy.
Boy, did my weekend look different.
Nothing better than easy, man. We're getting in the float plane. Get in the float plane. Just go, just get in the float plane. I'm sure he's probably scared of the float plane. Like every single thing we said, here's where we're going. Here's what we're doing. Just got up and did it. We're going to the club. The club. You know, we did two shows on a Saturday night in Anchorage, finished the second show. You know, Sonny was downstairs selling merch, taking pictures, blah, blah, blah. We got out of there at midnight. We had a 1:35 flight from Anchorage to Seattle.
And right after the show?
Directly after the show.
Shit.
Just left the club.
Yeah.
We flew from King Salmon Airport. We landed in Anchorage at 5 or 5:30 or whatever. We drove straight to the club, sat in the green room, you know, ate a slice of pizza, and then just went downstairs, did two shows, did the signings, took the pictures, piled into the Uber, off to the airport at, 12:15, took the 1:35 flight from Anchorage to Seattle. Then had an hour layover and then took the Seattle flight to landed in LA at 9:30 in the morning.
Wow.
Up all night. Not a peep out of Sonny. No complaints. Mm-hmm. No nothing.
Here's I think Sonny enjoyed it more than a lot of kids his age would. He just sucked it in. At one time we had like 2 hours before dinner and, We were kind of already starting to get drinks at the bar, but then Sonny says to me, Dawson, let's go ride ATVs. Yep, let's go.
Yeah, he's super agreeable, super easy, and you just go, here's what we're doing. We're going shooting, get in the van. And I'll go, okay, and just goes and gets in the van. Like, that's just who he is. I mean, wow. He understands we're going somewhere fun and yeah. we're going to do something good, but he's not going to hold people up, and he's not going to. Most kids and all women negotiate everything all the time. Like, well, why don't you guys go ahead and then I'll meet you guys back after. You call me when you're done. Like, there's none of that. Just go get in the van. Boom, in the van. We go do it. But had this interesting exchange, which is we're standing on the bear platform looking down on the bears. There's all these people. Sometimes they bring their kids and stuff. And he overhears one guy talking. And he goes, oh, it's the bear just like at the sports chalet. And Sonny remembers that there was a sports chalet in La Cañada. Now, there were sports chalets everywhere because it was a chain, but he only remembers the one in La Cañada, which is turned into a Whole Foods now. It's kind of a
kind of poetic.
Like it used to be, a, you know, selling skiing equipment and hunting equipment. And now it's selling Sprouts. Yeah. But so he just says to the guy, sports chalet. And the guy's like, yeah, La Cañada. The guy goes, yeah. And he goes, you from La Cañada? And he goes, yes, you from La Cañada. I was born in La Cañada. What's your name? My name's Sonny Carolla. Is your dad Adam Carolla? Yes, he is. Do you know Mark Garagos? Yes, Mark Garagos is good. I grew up with Mark Garagos. His brother was my best friend. Oh. I grew up in La Cañada. So next thing you know, we got this guy traveling around with us. He pulls out a challenge coin. You want to talk about a contrast in dads. He's a 60-year-old guy who carries around his dad's challenge coin.
Wow.
His dad is one of the first guy to pilot the SR-71 Blackbird, like the arguably the greatest plane ever created in aviation history. Whoa. An incredible feat out of the Skunk Works in Lockheed.
This is bespoke. This has his name on it, National Aviation Hall of Fame.
Why you have it?
Why do I have it? Because I brought it in to show you guys. No,
but I mean, how did you get it?
He handed it to me. He travels with challenge coins with his dad's name on it.
Fucking dude was a test pilot.
He was a test pilot who flew every SR-71 that came off the production line.
That's pretty badass.
People don't understand. That plane was so hairy. When you piloted that plane, you did it in a full astronaut gear. That's full gear. The guys landing on the moon, that's what you wore to pilot that plane. That plane flew faster than a bullet. And this is in the 60s.
Sure.
I mean, it's the craziest plane ever built. Like, it was just a stunning aeronautical achievement for the late 50s, early 60s.
It looks like a supervillain's plane.
Yes, and they'll never make another plane that way ever again because we needed to fly that thing over Russian territory and take pictures. The baddest ass plane in the world was armed with a camera.
Right.
That's all it ever had. It would fly at, you know, 2,000 miles an hour over territories, and the missiles that they had set up to protect their sites could never get to the plane. The plane was so fucking fast that
it would outrun the missiles. Wow. It was one of those on display outside of the Natural History Museum by the Coliseum downtown.
Yeah, it would outrun a bullet. They'll never do it again because now we have satellites.
Right.
So we don't need it anymore. But long talk about the SR-71 and how proud his dad was. I told him I bought my dad a trumpet. I don't have the coin on me, but I got to find that. It's just me pulling my pockets out.
Sure, right. Yeah.
Shrugging. A little moth out.
Got a horn with a cobweb on it down at the lower right hand of it. I got to get those coins.
A musical note flipped over.
That's right. But then, and this is one of those, oh, who cares? But it was a long conversation about the SR-71 and this guy's dad. And first email I got when I got back to L.A. was a friend of the show, Charles, sending me a link to Kelly Johnson, the guy who created the SR-71. talking about how this is the greatest plane ever. Not connected to this guy at all. Just 24 hours later, I get a link to the guy who created the SR-71.
It's crazy.
While the challenge coin is like sitting in my pocket of my sweatpants.
There's a chance that Charles was on the entire trip following you.
And we didn't know it.
From a 30-foot distance.
That's a very good point. So,
don't laugh at that.
But it was interesting. I was talking to Gergos about it at the wedding because Gergos loves Sonny because Sonny's got his little brain moving all the time and he's trying to connect everything all the time. So he hears a guy say sports chalet and then he starts going down this road where he's trying to connect things.
Well,
and
what are the odds it's that sports chalet?
Yeah, that's everywhere.
In Sonny's mind, quite high because that's the only one he's aware of, although he knew it was a chain. I'm just saying, if you kind of leave your mind open and neutral and you kind of connect thoughts and ideas and things like that, you can arrive at things. And next thing you know, we're hanging out with this guy and we're talking about his dad. And I got another challenge coin out of the deal. Let's see. What are we missing? We want to thank Matt Norman from the King Salmon Lodge who brought us out there and was just a great, great host.
To hell with that guy. How are the shows? I'm kidding. Man.
Yeah, great guy. Yeah. Shows were great. Audiences were great. Real Coots is a real like old timey kind of honky tonk.
Oh,
like,
I love that.
It is honky tonky in that place, but all on brand and perfect.
You got to do a what can Adam complain about Paprikash.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, can I ask what actually we were supposed to be on one of the shows with you, and we got a text at the last minute saying there was some technical.
We broke a piece of equipment.
We use a special mixer to zoom you guys in, and it works so you guys can hear Adam, and obviously we get you, and we can record it all. And it just wouldn't turn on, no matter where we plugged it or how we plugged it in. So we had to use a different way to record the show, and unfortunately with that, we couldn't zoom you guys in.
Well, I'm twofold pissed, because not only did I want to be part of the show, but I ended up at Boss Baby 2, because I no longer worked. And by far, the greatest part of that movie... It was my first time in a reclining seat in a movie theater.
Oh, yeah.
I've never experienced the luxury.
How's that possible?
I don't know, but it is luxurious, and that was my favorite part of the movie.
Our host, Matt, who's my age, looks exactly like Jim Youngblood, NFL Hall of Famer, Rams. Former Rams. Mm-hmm. No one had ever told him that until that point.
Later on, this made me... insane. So that night he's like, oh, what football player did I look like again? We were just talking at the bar and I couldn't remember the name because I didn't know Jim Youngblood.
I just walked up to him and went, you look exactly like Jim Youngblood. And then Chris pulled up a picture and we held it next to his head or whatever. But
and he says, yeah, if he's your age, he would have been like a teenager when he played, right? Or a youngish, probably alive.
Jim is 71 now or something, but he still just looks exactly like Jim Youngblood. And they're both 30. They look the same.
Youngblood is 71 now. But yeah, and totally looked alike. But so I'm talking to Matt, the manager at the King Salmon Lodge. Like, we're trying to figure out what football player it was because he's trying to tell his friends, like, oh, so Adam thinks I look like this guy. And I couldn't remember the name. And I kept going, like, I think his name's Jim Young. Jim Young. And Matt's just like, no, something else. And then I'm not kidding. 10 seconds later, Matt's phone rings and he looks at it. And a guy named Jim Young is calling him. And he just presses end and just continues to talk to me. Didn't mention anything at all. And I was like, how weird is that?
That is weird.
Jim Young calls him, doesn't say anything, just continues like, so what do you think of Alaska?
You guys were really in the land of the great magnet.
I know.
So far north, by the poles.
Play a vortex or something.
I was, reminds me of a million years ago, I was in my friend's kitchen, Mark Dropman, when we were at the Acme Comedy Club. I haven't told this story in a while, but he had a picture of a couple friend of his, like on his refrigerator back when people would do that. And the chick looked like Janis Joplin, exactly like Janis Joplin. And I said, look at that. Hey, your friend looks exactly like Janis Joplin. And he went, oh, trust me, she's no Janis Joplin. Like me, she probably didn't drink or she didn't sing. Or anything. He went, trust me, no. And I, just being a smart ass, just pointed at the guy next to him and go, well, he's no Bobby McGee. And he goes, his name is Bob McGee. That's her husband.
Wow.
And I was like,
anyway,
wow.
Are you kidding me?
But Jim Young called and Matt didn't care. But that's how you go through life not knowing you look like Hall of Famer Jim Youngblood.
Right. Yeah.
Yes, because when we were able to pull up those pictures, it was striking.
Yeah, there wasn't a TV anywhere in this lodge, and I doubt they cared about sports or anything like that.
Yeah, there's nothing. You'd go a long time without TV or really anything. That cell phone stuff was pretty spotty. Everything was kind of catch-as-catch-can technically, and that's the way it should be. You think you want all your shit. You don't want all your shit. Had no idea of, like, oh, somebody walked into a spa with his dick hanging out and terrorized a bunch of because he identified as a woman. It's like, yeah, it's all gone.
Doesn't matter.
We're going fishing.
That's my spa, by the way. And talk about not knowing what time it is. You don't have a care in the world. You don't know shit because there's no way to tell. The sun doesn't give anything away what time it is.
Everybody, get to Alaska once in your life. You will thank me.
Well, let's tell Parker I am so down for an Alaskan cruise at some point.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
All right. We got Dr. Stephen Gundry, who's a cardiac surgeon, is
going to
tell us about, the book is called The Energy Paradox. What to do when you get up and, when your get up and go has got up and gone. We'll talk to him about all that. First, I'll tell you about the X chair. Your office chair, can it give you a massage? Can it warm you? Can it cool you right in your back where you need it? Well, mine can. I love my X chair. I had an X chair before they gave me this next generation X chair just because it's a great office chair. The secret is their patented DVL, Dynamic Variable Lumbar Support, and it's got a feature that does cooling, does heat, does massage therapy, X-chair. You're going to spend a lot of time in your chair. Let's make it a good chair. Let's make it a X-chair. Four different massage modes and fast warming and heat technology as well. Feel the X-chair difference and do it for yourself. Trust me. It's the X-Chair, right, Dawson?
X-Chair prices are going up on July 11th for the first time in 2 years, so beat the price increase. Go to xchairadam.com now. That's the letter X, chair, ADAM.com. Or call 1-844-4X-Chair and get $100 off on your order. X-Chair has a 30-day guarantee of complete comfort, so you can finance your purchase with as little as $30 a month. Go to xchairadam.com now and use code XWheels for free X-Wheel Blade Casters, xchairadam.com.
All right, we'll talk to the good doctor right after this.
Engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.